Good morning, everybody. This is Omar Serrata with the Tilted Lawyer Podcast. We are back from our holiday vacation, if you'd care to call it that. I did want to do a very quick live. We're going to be doing Family Law After Dark later this afternoon. Hopefully, we'll be joined by Bruce, maybe Brad, the usual suspects, and a couple of others. Amy, Jennifer, Bradley. We'll see. But we got a lot of those. We have a lot lined up. I could not let the year pass without discussing Luigi Mangione. They're going after that kid. And they're going after him for reasons that I think are important to talk about. I'm going to discuss the timeline of how we got to where we're at with him. Why are they charging him federally and through the state? Why are they charging him with terrorism? We're going to talk about all of those things. And what does this mean in the larger context of the healthcare discussion that needs to be had in the United States of America? There's a lot to talk about, and we don't have a whole lot of time to get to it. But you're going to want to stick around because it's going to be a good one.
Whatever you might be going through and wherever you might be, this is Omar Serrata with the Tilted Lawyer Podcast. I'm here to take your mind off of things. Yes, I'm an attorney. No, I'm not giving you legal advice. We're going to sit and talk like people, as these are the candid thoughts of one practicing attorney, and it's after hours. So have a seat. Feel free to have a drink and join me. Let's get started.
All right, folks. Let's get into some of this timeline. So prior to November 18th of 2024, Mangione is a 26-year-old young man. Many have commented that he is exceptionally bright, Ivy League educated, exceptional IQ, writing abilities. He has an online profile where he has subjected himself to some of the discourse that's gone on regarding healthcare in America. He has himself been the recipient of healthcare in America that has led him down this path where he has taken it upon himself to try to affect change in America. Some would argue that he was nothing more than a 26-year-old boy that lost his mind and that his efforts were all for naught. There are some that are commenting that because of the public tenor of sympathy that has arisen as a result of people showing favor towards his side, that it's going to lead to some form of jury nullification where he might actually be acquitted. But what I can see surrounding this young man is the winds of the Manhattan District Attorney going in to charge him, not just via the state, but they're charging him federally, and they're charging him as a terrorist, and they're going to seek out the death penalty. They want to make, I don't know if they want to make him a martyr, but that's what they're doing. Look, I don't pretend to be an expert on the healthcare laws of America. I certainly have my opinions. I certainly have my opinions about what happens when a corporate organization that charges itself with the act of providing healthcare to Americans for profit openly develops AI programs designed specifically to counteract doctor-prescribed medications and treatments for the sole purpose of increasing profits for the shareholders, that America's going to feel a certain kind of way about it. And I think that the world is looking at us and kind of shaking its head and, you know, what to make of all of this. There was one young man that took steps and executed a CEO. And aside from all of that, he was a husband. He was a father. He was somebody's son. He was all of these things, all of the humanity things that you would want to attach to another human being. Most people's sympathies do not lie with him. And what does that speak in terms of a political statement? I don't know. I guess time will tell. All I can say is that the response to Mangione and how they are coming after him leads me to believe that this is a statement that the government, that new incumbent president-elect Donald Trump wants to stifle. So he's being charged as a terrorist. They want to charge him with the death penalty, which I don't believe is available as a state-led initiative in the state of New York, whether or not he gets convicted of murder one or murder two. So we have what we have, and how do we get here? So prior to November 18th of 2024, Mangione's mother hadn't spoken to him since about July. It turns out that Luigi's family had been looking for him, and that was according to messages that had been received by friends. Mangione was becoming, according to those that knew him and know him, more isolated, potentially more extreme with his online presence, adopting to what some would describe as odd ideological leanings, not just with respect to healthcare, but just, you know, there was a lot of political beliefs that this young man had. He wrote a review of the Unabomber, Ted Kaczynski, of his manifesto, gave it four stars on. There was a website where you could, I guess, grade manifestos. Yeah, he looked at Ted Kaczynski's manifesto and gave it a 4-star rating. I'm assuming that's out of 4 stars. Around August of 2024, in a notebook, Mangione wrote that the details are finally coming together and that the target is insurance. He noted that he was glad that he had procrastinated because it allowed him to learn more and more about United Healthcare and some of the things that he was learning about United Healthcare. I mean, I don't know specifically what he learned, but United Healthcare had come under fire due to the alarmingly increasing number of denied claims from its customers. And it had come specifically under fire for implementing an AI program that would take the recommended treatment plans of doctors and invalidate them. And the way to challenge them, you had to go through this process of this administrative process of granting a claim or denying a claim, reviewing the denial of a claim, which would result in litigation, which would result in discovery and depositions, wasting all of this time, all the while the underlying object of all of those claims were sick people that were in need of healthcare, who were in need of treatments, who were in need of medication that but for coverage from their health insurance carriers would have been unaffordable and therefore unavailable to them. Children requiring nausea medication for perhaps chemotherapy that they might have been undergoing at the time. Denied because it wouldn't have been deemed a necessary treatment. It's just a little bit of discomfort for an 8-year-old, a little bit of nausea. We don't need to be covering that. That is a luxury, young man or young lady. Those kinds of claims were popping up and have been popping up for years. I mean, this is nothing new. This is nothing new. Since I've been alive, Americans have been crying out about the injustices inherent in the healthcare system. to varying degrees. And it's just reached a head where we now have privatized insurance. Not that we have it now, that we never have had privatized insurance, but it's gotten to the point where capitalistic principles of growing the bottom line have usurped the general public's need for good health insurance that would cover treatments prescribed by doctors. And wouldn't it be problematic if the bottom line and the goals of the shareholders somehow were able to usurp the prescriptions and the treatments that had been written by doctors caring for their patients? But that's what's happened. When I take an oath as an attorney, I'm not supposed to put my bottom line as a law firm ahead of the needs of my clients. Doctors, they take these oaths and they're supposed to do no harm. They're supposed to treat their patients fairly and objectively and prescribe the required treatments that are going to get them better. Because healthcare in America is so abundantly unaffordable to the masses, many people are beholden to the claims that are being ruled upon by these health insurance companies that have been compromised. Because to let these claims go unfettered would ruin the bottom line, wouldn't it? That means less profits. That means smaller salaries. That means fewer dollars in our pockets for the healthcare people. And so what is the solution? What is the solution? I don't know. But it seems that healthcare legislation in America is broken when you have health insurance companies that are allowed to operate for the sake of the bottom line and in many cases overrule the medical decisions borne about by medical professionals who have been charged directly with the care of their patients. And now we have this young man, Luigi Mangione, who has committed an act that the federal government is calling an act of terrorism. Now, look, if you look at it in a vacuum, without any of the context, underlying context that I've gone over, and look, what I have to say is a drop in the bucket of this discussion that's taken place in America over the last couple of months. But if you look at it in a vacuum, you have a guy that murdered another guy in cold blood, on camera, in broad daylight, in the wee morning hours, outside of a New York hotel, who was on his way to work. And the penalty for that, yeah, is what it is. Life in prison without the possibility of parole, and if you're charged federally, death. Oftentimes, you have to read between the lines when it comes to these charges. Because the Manhattan District Attorney could have simply charged this kid with murder one. They could have simply charged him with murder two and accomplished the same sentence that they're inevitably would have gotten. Sure, life without possibility of parole, whatever. They chose to charge this kid with terrorism. And what is that, if not a political statement from the people that have been charged with charging this young man, sending a political statement of their own? If you come after our CEOs and you try to attach to your crime a political statement, then we have a political statement for you. You will die. How is that not the counter message that the federal government is sending when trying to charge this young man with terrorism. This was his manifesto. I'm going to read it for you. This is what he said. And you know what? I'll share my screen so that you guys can all, if you're in there, read along with me. So this is his manifesto. To the feds, I'll keep this short because I do respect what you do, country. To save a lengthy investigation, I state plainly that I wasn't working with anyone. This was fairly trivial, some elementary social engineering, basic CAD. A lot of patience. The spiral notebook, if present, has some straggling notes and to-do lists that illuminate the gist of it. My tech is pretty locked down because I work in engineering, so probably not much info there. I do apologize for any strife of traumas, but it had to be done. Frankly, these parasites simply had it coming. A reminder, the U.S. has the number one most expensive healthcare system in the world. Yet we rank roughly number 42 in life expectancy. United is the indecipherable largest company in the U.S. by market cap, behind only Apple, Google, Walmart. It has grown and grown, but as our life expectancy? No, the reality is these indecipherable have simply gotten too powerful, and they continue to abuse our country for immense profit, because the American public has allowed them to get away with it. Obviously, the problem is more complex, but I do not have space, and frankly, I do not pretend to be the most qualified person to lay out the full argument. But many have illuminated the corruption and greed, e.g. Rosenthal, Moore, decades ago, and the problems simply remain. It is not an issue of awareness at this point. But clearly, power games at play. Evidently, I am the first to face it with such brutal honesty. And perhaps the first to face it with such brutal consequences. They want to murder that young man. They want to give him the death penalty. So, I've heard some arguments that by virtue of the decision to charge him as a terrorist, will this rouse the hearts and minds of potential jurors in a case that is sure to come, probably sooner rather than later, and result in complete juror nullification, meaning that we don't care what this kid did, I'm not voting guilty. He's innocent in my mind. He's a regular Robin Hood, a regular modern-day hero for sending the statement that he did. There's some that will take that opinion. There are others who have a much more conservative approach. I've heard Ben Shapiro says, you can't just kill a guy in, you know, open season, broad daylight for the cameras and just expect to get away with it. And, you know, yeah, he's right. Because ultimately, if we look at the ABCs of what he did, he murdered a guy. And no, I don't condone killing people in broad daylight. And I don't think that any of you guys do. I think that the sympathy that you have found this young man surrounded by is a direct result of Americans being completely 100% fed up at the fact that it's not guaranteed that you have healthcare. I know some, hey, Dominic, do you got healthcare? Well, good for you, man. Yay. Good for Dominic. I know some 20 and 30-year-olds that don't have healthcare because they can't afford it individually for themselves, and their companies can't afford it, and then they don't qualify for Medicare. There are people that are just, look, it's a cost-benefit analysis that I'm just not going to apply because I can't afford the $800 a month it's going to cost, and I'm just going to go without. And so they just kind of hope for the best, and they gamble with their lives. God forbid that they awaken the next day with a sharp pain in their pancreas and come to discover that they are stage 4 pancreatic cancer or some other kind of malady. Yeah, Dom is my employee, but he's like a part-time guy. He's like a contractor. He's not really an employee. Dom, what would you consider yourself, man?
Like a contractor.
Yeah, Dom is a contractor. He's only employed with me while he's doing my show, put it that way. I don't get to tell him where and when he can't be and all those kinds of things. Angel from Australia. Angel from Australia says, thank God for Australia's healthcare. It could certainly be better. But we have a pretty good free healthcare system. If not, I see this happening. Look, Americans, not Americans, American corporations have been crying out loud to anybody that will listen for decades that free healthcare in America is impossible. Impossible. It can't be done. Never mind that we are like one of the very few first world nations that don't have free healthcare. It's been done successfully in many, many other countries similarly situated, and they have a good system and it works for them. Do they have, is it perfect? Do they have the problems? Sure. And it's not perfect, but it's better than what we have, because what we have is a capitalistic system whereby capitalistic decisions can usurp the medical decisions of healthcare professionals. And that's kind of where we start having conflicts of interest, and we're allowing it to happen. You can make money in healthcare. It's quite lucrative and it's legal to do. And it's the source of years of frustration for many, just like Luigi. Jody says, Angel, my meds would cost in excess of $25,000 per year if our government didn't subsidize it. Yeah. Amber Duff says, people always say that Canada has free healthcare, but they're wrong. It is funded by our tax dollars. And that might be the case. And look, I don't know how to implement united healthcare for everybody in America. I don't. I'd imagine it probably should be or will be funded by taxpayer dollars. But gosh, I was reading somewhere that the American military is funded by trillions of dollars a year. And they find a way to fund other things. They just don't find a way to fund healthcare. And when you ask for a small tenth of a percentage increase in any of it, they cried, oh, there's not enough money. There's no way we can do that, because it just so happens that these private healthcare companies have it in with the legislators where they're allowed to do what they do, unfettered. And it's quite lucrative for them. And what are you going to do? You don't like it? Move out of America. Well, some people do. Most people can't. And so we have what we have. I'm getting off track with this. So he writes that manifesto around August. In October 22nd, his notebook stated that 1.5 months, this investor conference is a true windfall, and described an intent to whack the CEO of one of the insurance companies at the investor conference. This entry was approximately 6 weeks before the murder of Brian Thompson. So it was something that he had been planning. Fast forward to November 18th, Mangione's mother filed a missing persons report for her son in San Francisco. On November 24th, Mangione, the shooter believed to be Mangione, allegedly, I don't care if they caught him on candid camera, arrives in New York City at around 10:11 p.m. that night on a bus from Atlanta, Georgia. He checks into a hostel on the Upper West Side under the name Mark Rosario, using a fake New Jersey driver's license. He consistently wears a mask throughout all of this, consistently wears a mask, except when he's flirting with a girl at a coffee shop. To which I'm like, Luigi, focus, man, focus. They weren't going to catch him. They were not going to catch him. He just made a lot of mistakes. It was a well thought out plan. It was well executed. He just got really sloppy because he's a 26-year-old kid and not a, he was not a professional. Could have been a professional. But the cute barista over there at the Starbucks gave him a wink and a smile, said, "Oh, I want to see your face. I want to see your beautiful smile." And then he did. He pulls it down, and then they get a, oh, Luigi. He made mistakes. So December 4th, 2024. Feels like last year, doesn't it? He leaves the hostel around 5:35 a.m., using an e-bike to travel to the Hilton in Midtown Manhattan. A shooter walks around the area, gets a drink and a snack at a coffee shop, sits on a bench. He's seen using a cell phone, steps out from between two parked cars and shoots Brian Thompson in the back and in the leg. He walks across the street to an alley, stashes the e-bike, leaves behind a phone, a water bottle, and a snack wrapper. And I think he left behind like a satchel full of Monopoly money because he was trying to troll the feds or whatever. Rides his bike into Central Park, later leaving without that gray backpack that he was wearing. He stuffed it full of Monopoly money. He took a taxi to the George Washington Bridge bus terminal, as seen on surveillance, entering the bus terminal, but not exiting, indicating obviously that he left the area. Authorities find shell casings at the scene with deny, delay, and depose written on them. Police begin a manhunt, canvassing the city and releasing images of the suspect. On December 7th, Mangione's mom is contacted by law enforcement, indicating that her son might be capable of such an act. What did she really know is a big question. On December 9th, this poor, poor worker at a McDonald's in Altoona, Pennsylvania, recognized Mangione from the photos, from when he flashed a smile at that cute little barista. I don't know if she was cute. I don't even know if it was a lady. It could have been anybody. I'm trying to tell a story here. But that was the photograph that led her to recognize Mangione as he sat in that McDonald's in Altoona, Pennsylvania. All for a $10,000 reward. I wonder if she's collected that reward. I wonder if she is facing any kind of public backlash. I wonder if her identity has been leaked anywhere. I'm not going to participate in that, if it has. I've seen various TikTok videos purporting to have outed the identity of this person, and it turns out it's not actually the person. But what a thing. I wonder if she was even aware of all of the other political conversation that was going on, and the fact that there was an entire section of the country that was rooting for Mangione's safe escape. I don't know, but she turned him in. He was arrested, found with a loaded 9mm pistol with a silencer, a notebook with handwritten pages expressing hostility towards health insurance. We talked about that. I read it for you. Also found in his possession was several thousand dollars in cash and a letter to the feds. Later this month, he was indicted on 11 counts in New York, including 3 counts of murder, 2 of which included the charge of committing murder in furtherance of terrorism, which to me is a political statement. It is a shot across the bow into the growing and feverish crowd of those who are upset with the United States healthcare system and who might be plotting similar acts against other healthcare executives in the hopes of furthering Mangione's message. He's also been charged with weapon possession, forgery in Pennsylvania. Of course, he had that 3D printed handgun that didn't have serial numbers, which has become all the rage, I've heard, since he's been arrested. Mangione is charged with federal crimes, including stalking, using interstate facilities, murder through use of a firearm, and a firearms offense. He waived extradition in Pennsylvania, was transported to New York in Manhattan, was arraigned in New York State Court, pled not guilty to all the charges. And by the way, he has a badass 30-year vet, Manhattan District Attorney, for his defense. And I really like her a lot. She is no slouch. She is a bulldog of all bulldogs. And she's going to be defending this young man. Karen Friedman and Agnifilo, I think is how you pronounce that. Agnifilo. I'm probably butchering it. She has been expressing concern about her client's right to a fair trial, has described him as overcharged, which I would kind of tend to agree that I think the terrorism bit is a bit much. The state case is set to proceed before any federal case, and he's scheduled to return to the state court on February 21st. And that is where we're at. That is where we are with all of that. So, I think that you have to really take a pause into what were the charging possibilities with this young man, Mangione. This was not a case that was going to be ignored because of everything that we've talked about. How are we doing on time, Dominic?
We're good right now. We're at 30 minutes.
Oh, it's 12:06.
I rescheduled the other one for 12:15.
Oh, thank you, sir. Thank you, sir. I really think that you have to consider the charging possibilities. They could have just charged him with murder one. They could have charged him with murder two. And had they won convictions after a jury trial on any of those charges, they would have got a simple life without parole. But the feds have come in. And when you get charged with a first-degree murder committed in furtherance of terrorism, not only does that carry with it a life sentence without the possibility of parole, and of course, that charge, it's based on the argument that the killing was intended to intimidate or coerce a civilian population or to influence government policy, perhaps. But if you read that manifesto, those arguments are not really well thought out. He's just pissed off at the state of affairs. But he is not, to my eye, attempting to offer or propose legislative change. So they've made the case a little more difficult to prove. So they got to prove so much more than just the murder. Now, the murder, look, they got him on camera. He shot the guy. That's not really going to be in dispute. But the terrorism bit of it, if you just go back and you read that statement, it was a short and it was a sweet. And the tenor of it was that healthcare sucks in America. Things suck over here. I'm doing this. It had to be done, whatever. But I think that what would be required if you're going to prove that the killing was intended to intimidate or coerce a civilian population to influence government policy, how are you going to do that, number one, with a sympathetic jury? And number two, how are you going to do that without being wildly speculative about what he was actually trying to say in the brevity of those that writing that I read earlier in the show. Two counts of second degree murder, one of which is related to terrorism. Second degree murder could charge that could result in 25 to life. That's not really the meat and potatoes of all the charges. You know, two counts of criminal possession of a weapon, one count of criminal possession of a weapon in the third degree. I think those charges are a little unnecessary. And really, they've been charged, it appears to me, just as lesser includeds of larger crimes that they're actually going after. Possession of a forged instrument, the 3D printing gun. So again, when you see a terrorism charge, that is a politically motivated charge. They don't want him just for the murder. They literally want to build a cross and crucify him on these charges. This is a political statement. Terrorism is a political charge. Whenever you see a charge of terrorism, fundamentally, that's supposed to be interpreted as an attack on democracy. It's supposed to be viewed under a much harsher purview than just simple murder. And if he's found guilty in the federal courts, well, that carries with it the potential for a death penalty sentence. I don't know how advisable. I guess you really have to consider what is the purpose? What are they hoping to accomplish here? Because what you have is the general public who has rallied around this young man. And I don't even know what the percentages are. I just look at some of the comments on some of these other videos, and they are wildly sympathetic to this kid. And there is such a disconnect between the way that the feds are talking, the way that the district attorney is talking, and I get it. They have to, they have been the people that have been charged with dissuading future criminals from committing crimes. So they got to talk a certain way, and they have a certain tenor to their voice. And when I really sit down and I consider just objectively looking at everybody at both sides, it just seems to me that there is a disconnect between what our elected officials are saying, what they think they need to say, and what the general public is looking for them to say. And I consider, look, I cover these cases for a living. I've been an attorney for many years now. And whenever you have a young man that has taken up arms in a situation like this, where there might be an ounce of sympathy to be had at his plight, oftentimes you'll see the DA reflect and say that, look, what a shitty situation. He's got to be punished for his crimes, but I understand. They'll say something to that effect. Think of a Gypsy Rose, you know, one of the cases that I've covered, just as an example. Here was a young lady that was in a wheelchair, forced to be in a wheelchair all of her life, the subject of massive amounts of abuse and torture at the hands of her mom. No wonder she might rise up and plot to kill her mother, her abuser of many years. And even though you would convict her and find her guilty of all these things, there would be a tenor of sympathy. None of that has come Mangione's way by the hand of elected officials. So there is a concerted effort on the hands of the feds and the state elected officials, the Manhattan district attorney, I don't think they're intending to make him a martyr. I think what they're intending to do is to send a message that you don't just walk around killing CEOs, which on its face is a good message. But what about the fact that this kid was his entire life ahead of him? Ivy League educated, very, very clearly a bright, articulate young man, good-looking kid, the world at his fingertips, just getting started in life, had a surgery on his back that led to severe personality changes with him. He needed medical care and medicine to treat his maladies. And for whatever reason, to him subjectively, he was inadequately cared for. And he's led down this path. And whether you want to call it a bout of mental illness, whether you want to call it an act of desperation, whether you want to call it whatever you want to call it, he felt that it was for the greater good that he would act in this way, because he did not feel heard. He did not feel like he had a voice. He did not have, in his mind, the ability to make anybody understand how effed up America's healthcare system is. And so he conjures up this plan over many weeks of planning, executes the plan, and finds himself where he finds him. In every other case that I've studied over the last, 10 years or so, where you have a young man in this position, there is always a measure of empathy that is reserved for him. But not for this kid, not by the Manhattan DA, not by the feds, not even by Donald Trump, who you would think would be the one guy to say, hey, well, you know what? The kid had a point. I don't know what Donald Trump would say, but Donald Trump has come out and spoken against this kid, essentially calling him out as a treasonist, as a terrorist, as somebody worthy of death, without having the discussion of whether or not our healthcare is adequate or not. And again, that might be a side issue, and I'm not going to do the healthcare conversation today because we don't have time. I just think that we should be highly vigilant of the way that they are charging this young man at the political discourse that is coming out as a result, in a way that they being the elected officials, are stifling the greater conversation of healthcare reform in America so that it doesn't become any bigger than what it has, perhaps. But I don't know. If they convict this kid, if they give him the death penalty, if he's convicted at all, he gets life without parole. No matter what happens, I feel like the general public has already declared this young man a saint. Regardless of what you think about him killing, they are looking at him, in some circles, not all, they are looking at him as a hero. And they're looking at this singular event as perhaps a necessary evil that is hopefully going to bring about change in a godforsaken system that regular folks cannot get healthcare to keep them alive, to make them feel better, to aid in their symptoms, to get the treatments that would save their lives. And as a result, children, men and women, and everybody in between are dying unnecessarily, to the point where, as Mangione said, and I haven't fact-checked him, but the United States has the number 42 life expectancy in the world, when they boast to be economically like number 1, 2, or 3 on the list of rich countries. It's a greater conversation that we're going to continue to have, but for right now, I just wanted to highlight this. That's what this young man is facing. He's facing not just charges from the state. He's facing charges from the feds, and they want to get him for the death penalty. They're going for the max on this guy. They're trying to stifle out his voice. And I don't know where the trial is headed for this. He's due back in court in February, so we will see. The state case is going to happen before the federal case. But yeah, I believe he has been overcharged. I also believe that there are political motivations with the way that they are going about prosecuting this young man. And we're just going to have to wait and see. All I'm urging everybody to do, whatever your political affiliation, red, blue, or purple, keep your eyes open on this one, because the government response, the federal response in particular, and the message that comes from our elected officials is going to speak volumes about who is actually running what in America when it comes to our healthcare. And that's all I got for Mr. Mangione on this Friday morning. We're going to be doing Family Law After Dark. Hey, Dominic, could you revert everybody over there?
Yeah.
At the end of this stream, you guys are going to be all filtered into Family Law After Dark if you'd like to join me. Hopefully, Bruce will be coming in. I got some other guests that will be joining us as well. I will see you guys over there, and we will get started with some Family Law After Dark. I love you guys all. Hope you have a wonderful weekend. Stay safe out there, and we will see you guys next week. Bye-bye.